very exciting stuff, and it seems to be continuing the intense interest in that region.
Oil companies snap up millions of dollars in leases on the North Slope. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, environmental groups are gearing up for a big fight over the Arctic refuge, but is industry?
In Alaska, for years, people talk about ANWR, ANWR, ANWR. Well, I hope that that's not the focus of the new administration.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
State and federal oil and gas lease sales held today in Anchorage saw an unexpected surge of interest in the North Slope.
The bids started to come in, and it was they kept running down on my office going, "You're not believing this," and we were surprised.
That's Ted Murphy with the Bureau of Land Management. The high bids today totaled nearly $19 million. That's a huge increase from last year's total of about $800,000. The sale was for land in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, where ConocoPhillips recently began developing the first two projects on the 24-million-acre chunk of federal land. Today, ConocoPhillips snapped up the lion's share of federal leases, but unlike last year, the company had some competition. It had to outbid a few smaller players like Colorado-based Armstrong Oil and Gas, which is also pursuing development of what could be a major oil field on the North Slope. Armstrong and ConocoPhillips also placed successful bids for state land on the North Slope, in addition to the Houston-based company Burgundy Exploration. And according to officials, this year's state lease sale is one of the most significant Alaska has seen in nearly two decades. The division saw 402 bids for tracts on the North Slope, and winning bids totaled nearly $17 million. Last year, the state took in $9.5 million. State Natural Resources Commissioner Andy Mack says he is very pleased with the results.
Very exciting stuff, and it seems to be continuing the intense interest in that region.
Governor Bill Walker also praised this year's lease sale, calling it great news for the state and the industry. But several environmental groups objected to today's lease sales. Nicole Whittington Evans of the Wilderness Society says she's worried about how oil development on BLM land could affect one North Slope community in particular.
The leases that were sold today are further surrounding the community of New Ixit in important subsistence use areas.
Another group, the Center for Biological Diversity, gathered outside BLM's offices to protest the federal lease sale, saying it was inconsistent with the Obama administration's goal to curb climate change. With Donald Trump about a month away from the White House, Alaska's congressional delegation sees a chance to finally open the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. But the environmental lobby is ready for the fight. And they've got some new patriotic allies on their side, military veterans. So far, though, the other side hasn't mounted a very visible effort. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Genevieve Chase served in the Army in Afghanistan, where she earned a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. For years, the Sierra Club has been taking veterans like her into the wilderness to heal. Chase says a special trip to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge restored and inspired her.
And I wish I could bottle that up, and I wish I could send as many veterans there as possible to experience that incredible vastness and to see the land, that the country that we defended.
While she was there, she says she heard or felt a message. Don't play small in the world.
It changed my life, and that's why I'm here.
Here, at that moment, was a comfy couch in the Washington, D.C. office of the Alaska Wilderness League at the base of Capitol Hill. The League was founded in the 1990s to be a permanent presence in the Capitol, fighting to keep oil rigs out of ANWR and to preserve other parts of Alaska. They with the rest of the Green Lobby, have made the Arctic Refuge a potent symbol. They can marshal a torrent of constituent calls to wavering lawmakers when they need to. Now, they're reaching beyond their usual membership to help spread their message.
And if it wasn't for our public lands, I would never have survived the transition home.
This video was filmed on a veterans trip in the Arctic Refuge amid clouds of mosquitoes for a coalition that includes the Alaska Wilderness League.
So, you know, let's get out there as military veterans and protect the lands that are helping to save us.
The Alaska Wilderness League, year in and year out, has a budget of about $3 million. They have a staff of 21. Its counterpart in Washington used to be Arctic Power. That was a largely state-funded effort to press Congress to open ANWR. Their side used to bring veterans to the Hill to make a national security argument for domestic oil production. Now, Arctic Power has no budget and no office, a victim of state budget cuts and of the Obama years, when it was obvious no ANWR bill would become law. Arctic Power board member Gail Phillips says they're beginning to take themselves out of mothball status. They haven't decided yet whether to seek money to join the fight.
We're just getting regrouped. You know, we just started getting regrouped, so we're just in the beginning of reorganization.
Even with GOP control of Congress and the White House, even with a cabinet that would be an industry dream team, it's not clear ANWR drilling tops anyone's priority list, outside of Alaska and its three members of Congress.
Compared to the past, we haven't seen as much advocacy promoting ANWR. You know, why that is, I'm not 100% sure.
Dan Simmons is a vice president at American Energy Alliance, an industry-sponsored advocacy group. Simmons' boss is the head of Trump's energy transition team. His blueprint for Trump's energy policy calls for more development in Alaska. It mentions the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas and the National Petroleum Reserve. It says nothing about the Arctic Refuge. Simmons says after 8 years of Obama, trade associations need time to sift through their priorities.
It definitely is important, you know, for the state of Alaska, but you know, it's tough to say how the energy industry views ANWR.
Kyle Parker, an Anchorage attorney who represents companies in the oil sector, says it's fine with him if there's no big, noisy ANWR fight next year.
In Alaska, for years, people talk about ANWR, ANWR, ANWR. Well, I hope that's not the focus of the new administration.
Parker says his clients would rather see the Trump administration ease rules and policy elsewhere on the North Slope than see Congress and the administration mired in another tangle over the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
To see a video explaining what exactly the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge is and why industry may want to drill there, visit Alaska's Energy Desk on Facebook. The state corporation charged with taking over the massive Alaska LNG project is going to have its finances scrutinized. The legislators who called for the investigation say they want to know what the corporation has done with the $600 million given to it by the state over the last several years. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more.
Outgoing Representative Mike Hawker and Senator Kathy Geisel asked the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to look into the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation's finances. The two Anchorage Republicans say they've had a hard time getting immediate answers to questions they have about how the corporation is doing business.
It has been somewhat elusive. We see, of course, the cumulative number, but not where the expenditures have happened.
Hawker and Geisel also asked that the auditor look into whether the corporation's board of directors had approved significant spending decisions and contracts for senior executive employees and consultants. Keith Meyer, the corporation's president, is the highest paid state employee. He draws an annual salary of $550,000 with an optional bonus of up to $200,000. Geisel says it isn't clear how the corporation decided on compensation.
And so, again, just due diligence on how these expenditures are being made and who is stepping up with the authority to make them.
Representative Hawker told the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee that he has a vested interest in how the corporation is run. He wrote the legislation that created it in 2009 with former House Speaker Mike Chenault. It isn't clear when the audit will be finished, but Giesel says it's likely that it won't happen before the end of the next legislative session in April.
Typically, this type of an audit can take, 6 to 8 months.
She says the audit is partially motivated by the huge amount of risk in the state's decision to take over the largest private construction project in North America. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
The Alaska Gasline Development Corporation's board will meet on Friday to discuss the audit. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a big overtime wage settlement for restaurant employees in Anchorage and Fairbanks.
If they continue to not pay their employees properly, they could potentially see a case such as this one.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein. Attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. It's a fact, 85% of Alaska Native and American Indian people don't use illegal drugs. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/weare. This message sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization.
Two Alaska restaurant chains have to pay employees more than $830,000 in overtime pay and damages. The state's Department of Labor and Workforce Development investigated Taco King and Gallo's Mexican restaurants after receiving several complaints by employees dating back to 2007 and a number of anonymous calls. The unpaid overtime wages and damages will be distributed to 159 employees. The damages are equal to the unpaid amount, meaning the employees will receive double what their wages would have originally been. Deborah Kelly is the Director of Labor Standards and Safety at the department. She says this is the largest case of unpaid wages in recent memory, and company-wide audits like these are rare.
Our goal is to ensure that employees are paid properly and that employers are educated so that they know the requirements of the law. And if they continue to not pay their employees properly, they could potentially see a case such as this one.
Kelly says employees should track their own hours and pay and report discrepancies to her division. Taco King and Gallo's have locations in Anchorage and Fairbanks. All of the restaurants that were audited are owned by Abraham Gallo. The state did not assess any fines, and all of the money will go to the employees. Investigator Donna Nas says Gallo and his staff were very cooperative and are fixing their payroll practices. She says her department will follow up with surprise investigations to make sure the restaurants are still in compliance. As the year comes to a close, Anchorage officials are taking stock of the city's problems with homelessness. Several aggressive measures to connect people with housing and social services are succeeding, but the coordinated effort is showcasing just how much work is left to do. As Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports, a meeting today of the city's Committee on Homelessness put on display where the city's programs are succeeding and where critical gaps remain.
The Assembly's committee meetings are usually pretty dry, but not this one. In its last meeting of the year, committee members were briefed on a number of programs implemented over the last year, and there was a lot of good news. Dozens of people have been moved into housing since this summer. Coordination among city services and nonprofits has created a list of 250 vulnerable adults, including their names and needs, based on comprehensive assessments, and a number of experimental programs are showing positive results. One is a work van program run by a company called Alaska WorkSource. This fall, staff picked up individuals living or panhandling on the street and brought them to work sites. Reporting by the Alaska Dispatch News recently uncovered questionable practices handling a no-bid contract from the city worth $75,000. WorkSource Executive Director Daryl Waters took issue with the claims and says that what matters more is the half a dozen people who have gotten sober and found employment in the 4 months since the program launched.
That's how we roll. We don't do a lot of technical stuff. We get right to the matter. How do we help you?
Waters was joined in the audience by five of the people who have gone through the program. The committee's chair, South Anchorage Assemblymember Bill Evans, says he and other public officials are pleased with WorkSource's results, held as a humane and cost-effective way of getting people off the streets.
But that doesn't give us a pass. Even because we're, you know, working for a good end, we're still subject to scrutiny because we're using, you know, taxpayer dollars. So we have to, you know, be willing to take that level of scrutiny and criticism to the extent it comes with it. If anything, the criticism seems to be directed mostly towards the city, the assembly, whoever granted the contract on a no-bid basis. And, you know, whether we rushed into that or not.
Much of what the committee heard was that some of the city's efforts to gather data on the extent of Anchorage's homelessness problem and deal with it comprehensively are working too well, which gives stretched employees and services more work than they can handle. One example are homeless camps. A systematic effort to locate, log, and clean up camps has nearly tripled the amount of material hauled to the city dump over 2015. So far this year, it's been 138 tons of debris, according to the city's Parks and Recreation Director. The increased study has exposed other overburdened services as well. Allison Kerr, the executive director of Covenant House, says not only are overnight shelters unable to house everybody amid an ongoing cold snap, but staff members are often the ones picking up the slack.
We are asking organizations to function over capacity, and we're calling it a municipal cold weather plan. And it is really the organizations are funding the backbone of this, and it needs to change.
Kerr also spoke of critical gaps in the city's social safety net and ability to get people stable on their way to housing. Chief among them are a shortage of detox beds and substance abuse resources. To make the point, Kerr put a tan grocery bag on the conference table and explained that inside were the cremated ashes of a 23-year-old. They belonged to the son of a colleague, Lisa Souter, who runs Beans Cafe. He died of a heroin overdose a week and a half ago.
That young man had myself and Lisa, who I feel like is a pretty relentless person. I could not get that kid treatment. And I think there's something wrong when we continue to fund the pickup of people and we don't fund what we do after we pick them up.
The committee's next meeting will be in the new year. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The ACLU of Alaska is following through with its threat to sue the Kenai Peninsula Borough over its invocation policy. In a lawsuit filed today in Anchorage Superior Court, the ACLU alleges the policy currently in place violates constitutional rights to free speech and equal protection under the law. KBBI's Shayla Farzan reports.
At its Anchorage headquarters, the ACLU of Alaska held a press conference to announce the lawsuit. Eric Glatt is a staff attorney for the ACLU. He says the Borough Assembly's invocation policy is not defensible under the U.S. Constitution.
Legislative invocations do have a long-storied history in America, but the kind of policy that the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly has implemented is not of a kind that the Supreme Court has upheld as being constitutionally permissible.
In the filing, the ACLU alleges the invocation policy violates four constitutional rights: the guarantee of separation of church and state, freedom of speech, freedom of association, and equal protection under the law. They are seeking a court ruling that the policy is unconstitutional under state and federal law. The controversy began this summer when Iris Fontana, a 27-year-old member of the Satanic Temple and one of two plaintiffs in the case, gave an invocation ending with the words, "Hail Satan." In response, the Borough Assembly passed a resolution on October 11th restricting the invocation to individuals and religious organizations on a pre-approved list. The other plaintiff in the case, Lance Hunt, is an atheist who gave an invocation before the Assembly this past July. Under the current policy, he is barred from giving future invocations.
I'm fighting for the rights of everybody in the borough to participate in all manners and facets of the assembly in which the public is allowed.
The ACLU of Alaska has openly criticized the invocation policy since it was first instituted and cites a 2014 Supreme Court ruling as a legal precedent. Joshua Decker is the executive director of the ACLU of Alaska.
This is why the ACLU exists. It's to take on important constitutional cases that really affect the day-to-day lives of Alaskans.
The deeply divided Borough Assembly has attempted to revise or rescind the controversial invocation policy multiple times. Those attempts have failed. Assemblymember Stan Wells has been among those who have staunchly defended the policy.
I accept the challenge to support the Constitution. The Supreme Court has never promulgated a law separating church and state.
In preparation for a lawsuit, Borough Mayor Mike Navarre proposed an ordinance on November 22nd that would have appropriated $75,000 to defend the invocation policy in court. That ordinance was later withdrawn. Members of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, along with the borough clerk, were not available for comment on the lawsuit. The Borough Assembly will now have 20 days to respond to the lawsuit. With help from Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, I'm Shayla Farzon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
The University of Alaska is bringing its three colleges of education under one roof at the University of Alaska Southeast. The University of Alaska's Board of Regents voted unanimously for UAS to lead the College of Education this morning. City and Borough of Juneau Assemblymember Jesse Keel says UAS is the obvious best choice.
Roughly as many teachers use University of Alaska Southeast programs as the other two universities put together, and in some categories, even more than that.
Keel is the Assembly's liaison to a UAS Campus Advisory Council. He says UAS has already been leading the University of Alaska in innovative education programs, and not being chosen would have been devastating.
Without a leadership role in one of the major missions of the university system statewide, UAS was in terrible danger.
The region's decision means the College of Education's administrative services will be based at UAS, but all three branches in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Southeast will still offer academic programs on their campuses and online. For months, the University of Alaska has been considering what its branches in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Southeast should specialize in. UAS Chancellor Rick Caulfield says UAS is uniquely qualified to lead the College of Education.
UAS has long had a really robust array of teacher education training programs.
The next academic programs the university's strategic pathways teams are scheduled to evaluate for consolidation are social sciences, arts and humanities, physical sciences, and mind training. A little piece of Alaska has helped create some of the music industry's biggest hits. Sitka spruce is a prized tonewood used to make guitars and violins. But one guitar company is pushing back and asking the feds and the music industry to reconsider clear-cut logging in the Tongass National Forest. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
Tom Bedell thinks when most musicians pick up an acoustic guitar, they don't realize they're strumming on wood, likely harvested from old-growth clear-cut logging.
If they knew that, they'd be outraged. But they don't. They don't think to ask.
He says 80% of the world's guitars are built in part with Sitka spruce, harvested from the forest of the Pacific Northwest and Southeast Alaska. Guitar makers say a good piece of tonewood should ring like a wine glass, and Sitka spruce does the trick.
Mr. Tambourine Man. You name it, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Bob Dylan, whoever plays an acoustic guitar, odds are that they played a Sitka top.
That's the part of the guitar that Sitka spruce is used for, the guitar's top. Bedell started his own guitar company in the basement of his parents' garage as a teenager.
And then in 1966, I opened my first retail store, and that same year I opened a second one. So when I was a junior and senior in high school, I was doing about $500,000 worth of business.
Bedell says back then, the idea was to make an affordable guitar, but he also realized the wood likely came from old-growth clear-cut logging. After becoming a teenage guitar tycoon, Bedell sold the company and went into a different career for almost 30 years before starting Bedell Guitars back up again in 2009 in Bend, Oregon. This time, he says, with the intent to make a different kind of product.
I said, okay, we're going to stop using any clear-cut wood of any kind in any of our instruments, because it's not just about the tree. That's where I think, we get emotional about how is that tree treated. It's the neighborhood it lives in.
In Southeast Alaska, Bedell says that neighborhood is close to valuable salmon streams and important habitat. He now relies on a supply of salvaged sitka spruce from dead or down trees. And I hear some whirring going on in the background. Are you milling right now?
Yeah, if you can hear it.
Brent Cole is the owner of Alaska Specialty Woods on Prince of Wales Island, Bedell's supplier. His company mainly deals in salvage trees, which they mill themselves. The U.S. Forest Service is gearing up to transition away from old-growth logging in the Tongass, but it won't end the practice entirely. Meanwhile, some timber industry groups have said less old-growth could mean fewer jobs in the region.
Some of my timber constituents, I guess, wonder why I built this factory with old-growth on its way out like that. Where am I going to get my resource? I guess if I stay as a smaller boutique of supplying custom builders and never get big, I guess that's one way.
Cole says there are two barriers to convincing the bigger guitar manufacturers to build with reclaimed materials. It can be more expensive than clear cut, and the wood isn't always pretty. But when Charles Barber wanted to buy a guitar, he knew he didn't want a cookie cutter instrument. Initially, he was looking for a rock and roll design with inlaid snakes.
I sent it to my wife, and she just said, please do not get a guitar that is that tricked out. Get something more traditional. And I said, don't worry.
Barber is a director at World Resources Institute, a global research organization that focuses on forest, climate, and energy. He's having a high-end guitar built by Bedell to the tune of about $6,000. And while there's no inlaid snakes, you could call it sustainably tricked out. It's being built with salvaged wood and details that include fossilized mammoth ivory, some of which has been unearthed by climate change. Barber says he wanted this guitar to tell a story.
People listen to music, they play music, they have a more personal relationship with something like a guitar than they do with, say, the 2x4s that go into building their deck extension.
Tom Bedell agrees. He's asking for lawmakers to end clear-cut old-growth logging in the Tongass, and he's asking guitar makers to make the same pledge. He says he wants to show the world that salvaged sounds better.
I'm doing it because, to me, there's something really special about the music that's part of our lives and the forests that enable the wood.
He says it might be a while before musicians start asking for guitars made out of reclaimed sitka spruce, but it would be music to his ears. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh, Ann Hillman, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Shayla Farzan in Homer, and Quentin Chandler, Rasha McChesney, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
GCI, keeping Alaskans connected to live the life they choose. GCI is an Alaska-born and raised telecommunications company and a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.